Great. Welcome back to the TNA Ball Podcast. I'm with my co-host today, Damien. How are you today, my friend? You well?
Yeah, I'm not bad, mate. Just chilling out now. I've gone from work.
Ah, great. So, it's a bit of a weird one at the moment because we've got a lot of, obviously, a lot of international listeners here, and football in the UK is obviously huge. Now, how do you feel like this season's going? With, you know, the COVID restrictions, do you think it's benefiting Liverpool or not?
Not all. I think of all the teams that have obviously made a difference and impact on whether they've got supporters in the stadium and that, I think it's probably had the biggest impact on Liverpool more than anything else. Obviously, everyone knows what Anfield's like when it's full of that full house and everything like that, and how the crowd can help them get a result kind of thing. And I think Liverpool are probably the ones that suffer more than anyone with having no fans in the ground and things like that. So,
well, the funny thing is as well, I was talking to my friend about this, who's also a Liverpool fan. I can't get that. You were everywhere, you guys. But I was talking about how much I believe the FA just don't help you. You know, you look at the League Cup situation when you had the, you know, the World Club Cup last year. They wouldn't arrange that. No fixture congestion. It's just non-stop. But when, like, City had a bit of a COVID scare, they helped, you know, rearrange all them games.
The problem with it is as much as we always think, it's like almost like an anti-Liverpool agenda, like even with the VAR things and things like that. But we don't like to moan too much about it because we get accused of moaning all the time as it is.
I think the difference is, how old are you, Damien?
21.
Yeah. Stone.
I'm 40.
So the difference is that there's a young generation of Liverpool fans who throw it in your face, and then there's the old school one. Now, you've been through the 30 years of hurt, you know, the not getting a title, whilst all these new guys are just expecting victory after victory.
We gloat a bit more when you're my age because we've had so long of not having it. So when we do get the success, we make sure that the Manchester United fans in particular know about it.
Are you the same as everybody else where you throw, where when they throw the Premier League titles, you always throw the European Cups in the face?
No, not really, because we're only one title behind them anyway.
I can't believe they're only one title behind them now.
The one thing that they always try and throw in your face is when it's Premier League rather than English Championship. Yeah. But it's the same competition, just add a different name.
Yeah.
So that can be annoying when they say, oh, no, you've only won one Premier League on the same as Leicester. No, we're not. We've won 19 titles.
If you look at COVID, though, through all the leagues, apart from, I think, the German League, everyone's suffering. You know, I think you've entered to, like, fourth. PSG have only just gone back up running. You know, it's affected. Look at Celtic. You know, it's crazy.
But obviously, as a Liverpool fan, I'm quite pleased to see Gerrard doing well at Rangers. So,
do you think he's going to be a future Liverpool manager?
I think they're hoping he will be, but it's too early to say because, as you've seen with Frank Lampard at Chelsea,
I was just about to say that.
The good thing is it when a club legend goes and becomes the manager, and then, because at some point a manager will be leaving. It's not very often you get someone that's like Alex Ferguson that's been there 20 odd years.
Yeah.
Average manager's there, what, 4 years or something?
Yeah.
So it'd be a shame for someone like Gerrard to then tarnish his name by not having a good season and getting sacked or whatever.
Well, I was talking about this before with a friend and I was going, I can't see anyone once Klopp goes. It won't be anyone but, you know, Gerrard to come in. But at the same time, can you believe that there's fans out there who want Klopp out? I think that's just crazy.
I can't believe anyone would say that, to be fair.
I'm telling you now that there's people out there, Liverpool fans especially, saying that he won't win another title, he won't win another cup, that's it. You know, do you just think that's crazy or what?
A lot of it depends on giving him time, because I've read something before we won the league, where, because of the way Klopp plays with what he calls heavy metal football, where it's like constant pressing and things like that, that the players get burnt out. So after three seasons, they have a bad season.
Yeah.
Now, at Dortmund, for example, the pressure of that bad season, he ended up walking away. Now, I wouldn't want something like that to have happen at Liverpool, but this is the third season type thing now, so this should be his bad season. And then it should be all recovered and back to normal again next season if it goes the way it's gone in the past. So, yeah. So hopefully we'll be even stronger next season.
Well,
but I'll give a point on this season, yeah?
I think you always have to have that one season out as well. You know, you have 3 years of success, 2-3 years, and then you have to rebuild, surely.
Yeah, well, I think every team always needs to like bring new players in to compete for positions and things like that. I don't like how, for example, we left it so late to bring a new centre-back in. We should have been on the ball with that straight away. You've always got to have a turnover of players. You've got to be refreshing the squad, things like that. And obviously, if you don't do that, people rest on the laurels a bit and they don't perform the way that they can do. And I think that, again, is how they can end up burnt out in a way as well. If you've had the same players playing for 3 years, you need that refreshment.
What do you think to Minamino to Southampton?
I don't rate him.
Do you? Wow. But really? You don't?
No. I'm not really impressed about him going. I've not been impressed with him so far since he's been with us. Watching him when he played against us for Salzburg, the way he plays, I thought, yeah, he'll work. He'll play well with us. But no, I don't think he's really... He's not really been given much of a chance, in fairness. But when he has played, I think he's had one decent game. And that was against Crystal Palace. I don't think he's played any other decent game so far.
What do you think to the demise of Tottenham? I mean, I know it's my club, but do you think... I was saying to...
To me, it's not a demise. Because Tottenham, where they are now, is how they've been for most of my life.
But, at the same time, he's playing football. I was trying to say this before I went... To say that we're a top six club, I mean, I don't know if we've been overachieving or not, but Bale is... I thought he wasn't given a chance until the last game when he was jogging about.
I don't know what's going off with Bale, to be fair. It's like Mourinho's just not putting the faith into him. He brought him in. You'd be wondering, like, why has he brought him in if he's not going to play him? Because he's a big money transfer kind of thing. He's only on loan as well, isn't he, I think, at the moment.
Yeah. It's his attitude in training. That's what it's come out and said. He said it's that
Tottenham's supposed to be his club kind of thing. So, isn't Tottenham supposed to be like his club? It's where he started. Yeah. Well, it's not where he started, but it's where he made his name.
Yeah.
So, you'd think that passion would be there to come and prove a point.
I think
I can't imagine that Bale is the one not wanting to. I can't imagine he's not in in Mourinho's ear wanting to play.
Actually, it's the opposite. It was just come out in the paper. He went up to Mourinho during a training session and he said he wasn't feeling it. And can he start on the bench? And Mourinho just dropped from the squad. And in the last one, when he did start against Brighton, it's got to have been one of the poorest efforts I've ever seen. It just feels like he's just not in it. It's crazy, but...
Players don't become bad players overnight.
Yeah, so, no.
It's a psychological thing, obviously.
100%.
Getting into his mind somehow. Some players are a player that you've got to put your arm around a bit, and some players you need to pull a rocket up their arse. And he's probably an arm round him kind of player.
Yeah. But
Mourinho's not an arm round you kind of manager, though, is he? That's the thing. He needs a kind of manager.
Now, this is an issue I've got. I've got quite a few West Ham friends who love trolling me at the moment. Obviously, no. They do. Now, it's a bit sad when you see Moyes above Mourinho currently. How long do you think they can keep this up for? I'm going to say another week, but every time I say that, they keep winning. Oh,
West Ham are playing well so far. But obviously, the thing with West Ham, I think a lot of it depends on Mikel Antonio. And while he's playing well, West Ham will do well. If he was to get a bad injury, I don't think they've got that many options up front to play instead. And I think as much as, like, take the Liverpool for a game as an example, when Liverpool played West Ham, if they don't have a threat up front, they just sit back and they don't have an outlet as such. So I think Antonio is the key for them at the moment.
I think he should be getting. I keep saying this to my friend as well. I really do think he should be called up for England. If he played for a top four,
he's been in the squad, hasn't he? He's been in the squad before. I don't know if he could be, if he got capped or not.
No, we played once. No, sorry, he didn't play. He got called up for a friendly. I think it was a year or two ago, but never got capped. He said it's his dream, but yeah, no, he's never been capped. I just wish he got that one opportunity. You know, he deserved it.
And he's not. He didn't start off as a striker either. He played wide, didn't he?
Oh, so, did he?
Yeah, he was wide. When he used to play Forest, he weren't a striker. He was a winger.
A bit like Sissoko. Oh, God, Sissoko. I can remember when we bought Sissoko as well from Newcastle and everyone was laughing at us. But, yeah, no, I think Antonio, I mean, they're playing, they've got a really small squad, though, West Ham have. That's the only thing. I think
I'll tell you who else is playing well, and I'd never heard of him before, really, until recently. Is that Souček in the middle?
Signing of the season, probably. You know,
yeah, he looks a good player, he does. But he's funny because they were trying to compare him when Liverpool played West Ham, with the commentators and that were trying to compare him to Fellaini. And I get what they're saying, like how he arrives late in the box to win the headers and things like that.
Yeah.
But I actually think he's a better player than Fellaini. I don't think Fellaini was that great a player. He's just good in the air.
Yeah.
I think he's a better player than Fellaini was. I think that's kind of doing him a bit of a discredit. From what I've seen so far, obviously he could be just having a good season. But
well, we've seen quite a few of players at West Ham. I think they're a bit notorious for having that one season wonder. But at the same time, they're such a weird team when they can be absolutely terrible and on verge of relegation, and then the next one they can be challenging for Europe. You know, it's such a weird, weird side.
There used to be years ago, like when they had Di Canio and everyone like that, they were one of them teams that they always seemed like they underachieved then.
Yeah.
Whereas now, they'll have a couple of seasons of mediocrity and then they'll get top half. And then a couple of seasons where they might flirt with relegation and then they come top half again a few years later. I think they're an established Premier League club that has got no danger of going down at the moment. But I think they're just having a good season. And this season, they might finish 5th, 6th, 7th. Next season, they'll be back down to 14th again.
Well, since this is our first, obviously, podcast, I'm going to ask you now, bottom three.
The bottom three will be the current bottom three.
Do you think?
West Brom and Sheffield United. Although, I wouldn't be surprised if Brighton slipped in there just for the fact that they can't score goals. But I think the bottom three will be... I think Brighton should just about have enough stale before.
Sheffield just won again tonight.
Yeah. Sam Allardyce knows how to get teams out of trouble, but looking at the West Brom team, I don't know if he's going to get these out of trouble. He made a few signings yesterday. I don't think I really took any notice of it. I know he got Ainsley Martin, whatever you say his name, one of Arsenal. He's got him. I can't think who else he got in.
Did he get from Arsenal? Did you say that?
Yeah, I think he's on loan.
Oh wow.
Ainsley, whatever his name is, Miles. Him.
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't know we got him. That is a good signing.
I don't think any of the new signings played tonight, though. Signings can make a difference. I think he got five players in, I think it said. But if you're losing to Sheffield United,
Who do you think is going to win the Prem then? Damo.
Who do I think is going to win the Prem?
Yeah.
A common sense is it's going to be Man City at the moment, but I ain't give up hope.
It's so weird because at the start of the season, I remember people saying Pep out and that he's rubbish and that his time's gone and that's it.
I don't think he is all that myself. I think he's got a style that you can figure out within a couple of seasons and then he's had his time.
Yeah.
But Man City do back him financially, obviously, as well, which helps because you stick Sam Allardyce at Man City, he'd do well. It's just facts that the money you've got, you can sign who you want to sign to make your style of play what you want. But I don't believe Guardiola will still be there in 2 years.
No, well, he's got a 2-year contract. I think they've only really done that as well for potentially the Messi signing.
Yeah, I don't think he's there long term. I think he'll get bored and want another challenge and he'll go to Juventus or somewhere.
Yeah, I'm excited. affecting his record of defenders that he's purchased as well. He's spent something like
a lot of money on defenders, but that's because I think it's because he's not a defensive coach. So no. He's not. His coach is the way his style of play is with all the little tiki-taka passing. You kind of need ball-playing defenders, but actual art of defending itself is something that is quite a specific thing, isn't it? And his style's maybe not suited to that, and he has to go out and spend money. He's not going to necessarily develop. Because even the young players that Man City got in the reserves and stuff, none of them have come through the academy, really. They're all players that they bought from elsewhere.
Yeah.
Buy them at 17, 18 or whatever from elsewhere.
Now,
Foden's come through. Foden's a good player, and Foden will go on to be probably one of Man City's legends in the future, I think. But
what do you think, youth?
What do I think? What
Liverpool's youth? Are you happy with the prospect you've got coming through the ranks? It's got to be exciting.
Yeah, we've got loads of prospects coming through. Now the problem is we've always got loads of prospects coming through. They're always being raved about, and some of them don't make it. But I think some of that is down to the fact that you've got to be trusted to be given that chance in the first team. And if you're not trusted to get that chance, you've then got to drop down the leagues and work your way back up, and it don't always work that way. Sometimes you've got to drop down to League One and you have a bit of a barren spell, and suddenly you're a career League One player. And a perfect example is Conor Cody. Conor Cody was in the academy. And we thought he was a decent player, but we thought he was too slow. So we let him go, and he dropped down the leagues, and he's worked himself back up to be a Premier League player.
Mm. Oh, yeah. There's quite a few of them. I also, whilst we're on the subject of letting people go, what do you think about the Lampard situation? Do you think it was right to sack him or not?
No, I don't think. I think they got rid of him too quick, but it wasn't going well. And this goes back to the same thing as what I said earlier on with why you wouldn't necessarily want Gerrard as the manager, because it can kind of taint their legacy at the club, kind of thing. But yeah, I do think it is. But Chelsea, to be fair, Chelsea always sack people quite quick anyway. I remember when they did it with Ranieri. Like, sacked him when he just won the Champions League or something like that. He'd won something and then sacked him.
Not Ranieri, that was Di Matteo, but I know where you're coming from. When they first took over, it was Ranieri, and even though he was getting them very much up the league, he got rid of him, didn't he? I believe for Mourinho, because he wanted him, because he was the manager he brought in with him, you know, Ranieri. But at the same time, it's that model, I believe, can only work for so long.
You know, sacking the manager, yeah. You've got to give him time to build a product. Like, look how we've done with Klopp, for example. When Klopp walked in at Liverpool, we didn't just instantly start winning. They had to give him time to influence his style of play onto the squad and things like that, and to change any players that he thought maybe weren't capable of doing that and bring the right players in. Things like that. You've got to give them time. I think Chelsea's big problem, and what's really affected Lampard, is that Havertz and Werner didn't just hit the ground running.
Yeah.
If they'd have come in and started smashing it straight away, Lampard probably still be in a job now.
I don't know if he wanted all these players as well. It's like, I believe that a lot of them, they wanted him to keep Kepa, because they spent like, you know, 60, 70 million on him. And he was just like, no, he's rubbish. And it was like, fine, we'll get you a keeper. But they wanted to keep him. You know, you can't
be... Who wanted to keep him? The board?
Yeah, the board.
Well, Abramovich had done it before, hadn't he, when he bought Shevchenko. And it wasn't the manager's choice. Was it Mourinho that was there then? I can't remember who was there. But whoever it was, Shevchenko wasn't the manager's choice, and Abramovich brought him in anyway. There's been a similar situation today, hasn't there, where Andre Villas-Boas has offered his resignation at Marseille.
Yeah.
He didn't want that cham that they bought off Celtic. To be fair, I thought he was crap anyway.
Yeah,
I'm surprised he didn't want him.
crazy. I just thought, well, what do you do now? See, he's got to go though, hasn't he? You know, you can't make a big statement like that, especially if you signed him and just gone, well, I'm not going to play him then, you know, and he's put his resignation. You've got to, you basically...
I don't know if they've accepted his resignation or not. I've just seen that it'd been offered, because obviously I've seen it when I was at work.
It'd be very hard to refuse it though, right? I mean, he's made a big stink like that. It's going to be very hard to keep working as well, isn't it? You know.
See, I mean, obviously, as you're aware, like, I run my own club as well. I run my own non-league club. And as chairman, sometimes the managers will make a decision that you think, yeah, I'm not sure about that one. And I'll offer my opinion and I'll say, right, do you not think because of this or do you not think that or whatever? But ultimately, if the manager says, no, this is who I'm playing, that's your choice, mate. You've got to live by that decision. If this goes wrong and we lose the game, that's on your head. But I'm not going to sit there and demand that he plays a certain player or he brings a certain player in or he doesn't get rid of a certain player.
Now,
I put myself in a position where if there's somebody who I don't think are good at the club, like they're a bad influence or whatever, I will go above the manager's head and say, I'm getting rid. I don't want him in the club. But I wouldn't say to him who he can't bring in. If he wants to bring a certain player in, that's up to him. But if there's someone that's been a bad egg, I will say, right, we need to get rid of him. He's causing a problem.
Say if he does, you do give you advice then, as the chairman, you give you advice and he decides to go against you.
Now, then I back him. I completely back him. Players sometimes will come to me and say, oh, why is this happen? Why am I not getting picked? Why is it? And I'll always back him with the exact whatever response it was that the manager gave me of why he's picking them. I will back him and I will say, this is why, and explain it exactly the way the manager's explained to me. Because I always get the managers to explain his decisions to me. But yeah, I'll always back him. I would never say to a player, oh no, I think he was wrong, I would have played you. I don't say things like that, because that causes splits and divides. And I know, obviously, our level is only really low level. Like, we're the 13th tier of English football. But there's still only people. So whether it's Premier League or whether it's non-league, they're still human beings. They still have the same thoughts and things. It's just not the money sloshing about.
Now, it's great that you come up with that example, because I'm pretty sure that a lot of people, especially like Chelsea, for instance, that does happen, where people go above the manager's head and they go, they've got one of the worst dressing rooms, probably.
That's how you have all this player power, isn't it, then? When you start getting your player power and you start fueling it by things like that. You need to avoid that. The players need to know that what the manager says goes.
Right, because otherwise you get... I mean, I think it happens at Madrid as well. And I mean, look at that. I mean, and
it's not as if Zidane's a little character, is he? Because Zidane's a big character of his own.
Yeah.
So if the players all start going against what he's saying, that would cause clashes, because he's going to stand up and be his big character as well.
There's so many big... I mean, you look at the model as well. I'm so happy we haven't got the model here that we have in Spain, when they heavily rely on income from people, you know, ticket revenue. So you got players that's on £600,000-£700,000 a week. And when COVID hits, I'm surprised that they're not going to go bankrupt.
They have a different kind of model in Spain, though. They can negotiate their own TV deals. So, like, for example, how the Premier League negotiate as a whole with Sky Sports, for example, and then split the money between all the clubs. In Spain, they don't do that. So Barcelona can go direct and negotiate their own deals. And Real Madrid can go in direct and get their own deals. So they can get paid more money than the other clubs. So that brings them more money in. And they get a lot of money off the governments as well. The government, Barcelona and Real Madrid would have gone bust years ago if it weren't for the amount of time to get bailed out by the government. Because the government see them as like a tourist attraction. So they will bail them out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's kind of what they were thinking with the Rangers, but they didn't go down that way, did they? They actually let them go down. With Real Madrid and Barca, it's different now, because they're in so much debt as well.
They're kind of institutions, aren't they?
Yeah. I've heard that they're now requesting this European Super League. Now, before I ask you your opinion, UEFA's come out and says that I understand you're in debt and you want all this money, like you just rightfully said, they would be asking for their own TV money again to get that money and that revenue in. But UEFA's come out and says that we'll ban you from all competitions and also players from the World Cup if your team joins us with this European Super League. Now, obviously, that now doesn't look like it's going to be a possibility because UEFA's quashed it.
Well, I thought it was UEFA that wanted to organise it, though.
No, because it's going to be out of it. It's going to be outside UEFA.
Well, if it's outside of UEFA, it's therefore not sanctioned, so therefore it's illegal anyway. Because this is like, obviously you kind of have a bit, we've had conversations about boxing in the past, so I know you know a little bit about boxing. Now, take an example, right? So in boxing, you have a self-appointed body, the boxing board, British Boxing Board of Control. They're self-appointed. They're like a members club. So you pay to be a member and they organise the fights. The FA is different. The FA are appointed by the government. Like, they're an officially mandatory thing. So if you do something outside of the FA, then in effect, it's illegal. Like, you start a league that's not sanctioned by the FA and a player gets injured, you can be punished for that. Whereas in boxing, you can't. So it has a different thing. Now, obviously, an FA follow UEFA and UEFA follow FIFA. So it must go along the same lines. Like, if you have a competition that's not, if you have a, you organise a European Super League that's not sanctioned by UEFA, then effectively it's illegal.
Yeah. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. It might have been FIFA who was on about running it for them. But I know they was on about getting rid of UEFA due to the fact of the Champions League. You know,
obviously, a lot of people think all the like FIFA and UEFA and that's all corrupt anyway.
It definitely.
So, I mean, we've seen that with that Qatar vote for the World Cup.
Yeah.
The corruption and buying votes and things like that. So they'll always go with what suits their agenda. And if it was going to make them loads of money, they'd be up for it. It's the fact that the clubs want to make the money. If it was, oh, the money's going to go to UEFA or it's going to FIFA or whatever, and then it gets redistributed, that's a different matter because they've got their finger in the pie then and they'd be up for that. But because the clubs want to take the money directly themselves, they're like, well, don't really want that.
Would you like a European Super League with no regulation? Relegation for 20 years? You wouldn't?
No.
Even if you guys was involved and it gave you £1 billion, for instance.
I still wouldn't want it. Because I'd like it as an extra competition, but I wouldn't like it instead of the Premier League or whatever.
Well, actually, what they said is that was the drawn-up solution is that the Premier League would happen on a Saturday. The European League would then take place on a Wednesday and then they would drop out the Champions League.
So, right, but I think the Champions League structure is broken as it is, and I would prefer it to go back to the old ways. Now, obviously, again, it goes back to me age again with it, don't it? But the way the Champions League is structured now, it's all about the big clubs making money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the seedings, the coefficients of how many teams from each country, it's all about guaranteeing the likes of Liverpool, Man U, Real Madrid, Juventus, Barcelona. It's guaranteeing all them big clubs are in it as much as they can without kind of making it a close shop. Now, what it used to be, obviously, I'm not saying go back to the days of one team from each country, where it was literally the champions of each country. But the way they did it before with knockout rounds, two-leg knockout rounds, it gave the smaller clubs the chance. It didn't isolate them. Because you think, if you'd have been Tottenham like in Champions League now, right, and you're drawn out away to Bromby, you think, oh, it's a nice, easy game. You'd have got drawn out to Bromby 25, 30 years ago as a tough away game to go to.
Yeah.
But the difference is now is the TV money. Like, Sky Sports injected so much money into the Premier League, then all the money that goes into the Champions League and all that sort of stuff. Nobody wants to watch the Danish league, so they don't get them big deals and stuff like that. So it needs to kind of do something to balance it and make it so it's not tilted in toward the big clubs, so that you can get a Dynamo Kiev getting to the Champions League quarterfinals, semi-finals. You can get a final of, I don't know, Galatasaray versus, I don't know, Spartak Moscow or whatever. You can't get them sort of finals anymore. It's always the big clubs. It's very rare you get a smaller club. And they're not small clubs, they're big clubs, but smaller than the big juggernauts. They don't get them runs in the cup now. And all they do is feed it down and say, well, you get the Europa League. You can have a good run in the Europa League. But that's slowly trickling down now. Like, how you come third in the Champions League group, you get put into the Europa League and things like that. It's all about protecting the big clubs. That's all that's for. It takes away the integrity of a competition. So I would prefer it to go back to two-leg knockout competition. But it brings in less money that way, because obviously if you have a group stage, you've got three home games to bring in your money for your tickets, you've got your TV rights, all that. It's more games, isn't it? So more games means more money.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially with the Europa League. You know, you wouldn't lose the FA Cup quarterfinals and then get into the League Cup semi-finals, would you? You know, no. I do.
There's like... another one starting next season. You know,
what's that?
Another European trophy starts next season.
Do you know what? That's a very good point. The Europa League 3.
I can't remember what they said. They was calling it now.
It's the Europa League 2, but it has got a certain name. You are right. It's just crazy. It can go on like fair play. It's just great. It is.
It's just all about guaranteeing them European places for the big clubs. That's what it's all for.
If you get into the Premier League soon, you will be basically guaranteed European qualification. You've got a 50-50 chance, basically.
I mean, I can remember years ago, Liverpool getting a team called Kusis Ilate in Europe in a knockout game.
Yeah.
If, do you even know who they are? Kusis Ilate, can you remember them?
No.
They're from Finland. They were crap. Okay. But to them, it was that big day that they had the chance to earn that big money by playing Liverpool. Wrexham and that used to play in the Welsh Cup. And then when they won the Cup, they'd get into Europe. I can remember them having a Cup Winners Cup game where they got Man U. Again, it's that chance to earn them big monies. Just like, say, you're Fleetwood and you get drawn out to Arsenal in the FA Cup. It's that big chance to earn some gate, isn't it? Like, you can get that big money from having them come to your ground.
Well, as a chairman yourself, Damien, would you love to face a big team at your ground? Or would you like to keep them away? You know, would you like the prospect of the money or would you like the prospect of promotion? You know, I've got
to
go.
If you're speaking to me as a chairman, I would want them away to get more money. If you speak to me as a fan, I would want them at home.
And then you're torn halfway in between, aren't you, right?
Yeah.
What
obviously, you get half the money in the FA Cup, whichever ground it's at, half the money gets split in half.
Do you think clubs should be punished for fielding a second string team in cups?
No.
Because I remember Klopp coming out going, well, we have to pay their wages as well, all the players, you know, so they all should have a chance to play, which I do agree with.
Yeah.
And if you get, I think, Ward never
got... You've got to have a time to blood your youngsters. You've got competitions that you've got to prioritise. There's a lot of games, which is all down to the financial side, so you've got to spread your squad out. So, no, I think, personally, as long as you fulfil the game, it shouldn't matter who you put in the game. So, I think them rules of having to have a field, a strong team and whatever, I think that's there to protect the smaller clubs, that is, so that they've got to have the big players come to their games and stuff like that. But it's adding in chances of injury and things like that. So again, going back to another rule that I think annoys me, that I think it puts a chance of risking injuries as well, is if you've seen how late the linesman put the flag up.
Don't get me started about that.
I'm not going to mention Van Dijk because Van Dijk was caused by that happening. But even it's trickling down to lower down the leagues where the linesmen are putting the flags up late. I've even seen it in a game at our team's level where a player has been ruled offside, one of our strikers has been ruled offside, and their defender has gone literally straight through him and snapped him in half, but nothing was given because the flag had gone up. So people will get injured because of that. It should be, if they're offside, stick the flag straight up.
Yeah, yeah. I do get the reason why they don't do it, but if you just had like a player go through even offside, that should be a red card, even if it's after.
It should be, but I've never seen one given.
Same. It's same with the monitor. I was talking about this with the VAR situation. Now, VAR isn't wrong. It's how it's used. It's in cricket. I don't know if you're a big cricket fan or not, Damien, but
no.
It takes 5-10 seconds for a review.
For example, if they've got to draw lines on the pitch and mess about and decide, oh, is it a centimetre off or whatever, if you've got to mess about with all that, then it's onside. It's not maths, it's human nature. So if you can see that they're offside when you pause that camera, then they're offside. Shouldn't be, if you start drawing lines, the referee can't draw lines on a pitch in the middle of a game. So as much as the technology is there to be able to do that, we don't. How many times have you seen lines and gone, oh, I don't know if that line's in the right angle or whatever? So I'd say sod the lines. Don't do it. You look at the camera. You don't even have the guys in the VAR thing. They can just speak to him and say, right, check monitor. If he checks his monitor, because it's supposed to be clear and obvious errors. A lot of the time, they aren't clear and obvious errors. Like, someone's been a goal disallowed because their armpit was offside. How's that clear and obvious? It's not. So it should be, they get a little call on the headphones that says, right, you want to go and have a look at the camera on that one. You go and have a look. There's no lines and stuff. He can see, right, is that a clear and obvious error? If it looks like it's offside on the camera, then yeah, maybe it's an error. You don't draw lines, because if you've got to draw lines, that isn't clear and obvious.
I think that the line needs to be thicker. Don't when they put it down. But VAR was mainly there for, if it was a massive mistake, to look up at the screen. No, I don't think everyone says we want every single, you know, event overturning. People just said the big, massive calls, they're being called wrong. We want them changing. Nobody said we want, you know, a foot wrong, girl.
But again, but that's still the clear and obvious, isn't it? It's the ones that should be, that everybody except the ref could see what happened. So he gets the chance to look at the camera and say, yeah, right, okay, I got it wrong. And that should be it. Let me just do a bit of geometry on there.
Like you said, if you've got to look at something, it definitely shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't. And the whole, and this whole handball situation as well, how long do you have a handball and then go, actually, that was a goal, but the handball was 2 minutes ago?
Yeah.
You know.
To be fair, as much as I've seen people moaning about that, I haven't seen any time so far where I think the handball was too long ago for it to matter. No, I've not seen one yet. Like, for example, the one where Liverpool got disallowed the other week where Firmino handballed it. To me, that was fair enough. That was fair enough. He's handballed it. It was against Tottenham, wasn't it? He's handballed it. To me, it's disallowed. Now, the argument, you could also say, well, is it come off Dyer's arm? But Dyer didn't. He's not deliberately, he's not doing anything. His arm's against his body. You can't do anything about that.
But early in the season...
To me, that decision was right to rule that out.
Yeah. Early in the season, can you remember the Newcastle game when the ball was headed against his hand and they gave a penalty for it? That seems to change now.
You know? Because they were saying it's not a natural position.
Yeah.
But you've got to allow so much time to react to get it out of the way. Like, for otherwise, you'll get to a point where a player will run into the box and they'll just flick the ball up at a player's hand and go, penalty. Because they're good enough players to just aim it at someone's hand.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree with you. Now, when you talk about European competitions, what do you think of the Europa League going back to, like, a Cup Winners' Cup?
What do you mean? Like, just...
Two legs.
What, not a league places in?
Yeah, so basically, what if you remember before, the Cup Winners' Cup was...
Just two-leg knockout.
Yeah, two-leg knockout all the way through. I think that's what the new competition is. I might be wrong.
No, from what I can gather, it's exactly the same as Europa League. It's just the Europa League is smaller, less groups. It's Europa League, I think, has something like 20 groups or something, don't it, in the group stage?
Yeah.
It's just having less groups, and then groups that are taken from the Europa League then become in the other group, in the other tournament instead. It's still a group stage thing. Do you know how I know that? I only know that from playing Football Manager.
When you're on Football Manager, though, who do you start with? Do you start with a Prem team, or do you, like myself, you start with a bottom league team and then work your way up?
I'm part Hungarian, so I take over Ferencvaros.
Really?
Yep, and try and get as far as I can. Obviously, winning the league is comfortable enough. It's when it comes to getting into Champions League and that, and see how far I can progress. And I've managed to get to the Europa League semi-finals with them before, but I've never got beyond probably the second or maybe quarter-finals, I mean, stuff like that with Champions League.
Pretty impressive. You need to work on that backroom staff.
It takes a long time, like 20 seasons. Like developing youth players and stuff, it's a long-term project to do it.
It really, really is. Now, what do you think of Arteta? Do you think he's the right man?
As a manager, he's not looking great so far, is he?
From
what I can gather, he's obviously... I mean, I don't know a lot, to be fair, because he's not from my club as such. From what I can gather, he's well-respected as a coach. but it's different being a coach to being a manager.
Now, you said you're old school in regards to your football approach. Now, do you think there's a place in this world for TV channels like Arsenal Fan TV? Do you think they should have such a big platform and a big say? Because social media is totally different now. You know, you can influence a club.
We need to have social media. It's not totally different. Yeah. We need to have it.
That's exactly. Do you think fans should have that kind of platform? Or do you think it should go back to like Sky Sports where you just put the fan commentary on and that's about it?
I don't think you could ever go back. I think it's gone past that point. I don't think you can go back from it. So obviously you're getting players being abused and stuff. They've been recently the last couple of weeks, haven't they, where a lot of players getting racially abused on Twitter and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't think you can ever go back from it. But what they could do is, as I've seen this morning on the news before I went to work, where they're saying they need to make it so that Facebook and Twitter and that, when you start opening an account, you've got to give them ID. So then you're accountable for whatever you say on Facebook or Twitter. So if you give racist abuse to a player, Twitter can look and say, right, that's who it is. This is his address and everything. It's going to get him arrested.
I understand. And personally, I think that's a great idea. But, I mean, you talk about people who's already moaning about privacy laws. And, you know,
Already had to do it. So it's not a big deal to me. Like on Facebook, my name on Facebook wasn't my name at one time. Because obviously, you know, I used to be a boxing promoter, don't you?
A while ago.
I used to be a professional promoter, obviously, with all the Maltese thing and that. Obviously, Daniel and that was with. So my name on Facebook, I had it as my promotion name. And I had it, and my name was that probably for 10 years on Facebook. And then all of a sudden, I got a thing off Facebook notification, and I had to send a copy of my driving license and put my name as it officially is. So they made me change my name. It's been changed for about 5 or 6 years now.
That's weird.
But I know a few people that had it at the time. So if they can do that then, what's to stop them doing it now? Why can't they do it now?
Yeah.
Unless they're going to say, oh, it's to do with all your GDPR laws and all this sort of stuff. But they haven't got to release the information. They can only surely they can have a law where you say, right, you release the information if it's required by the police. And that's it. It's no, the information doesn't go anywhere else. Everyone else has to manage with GDPR laws. Why can't they?
Yeah, no, I understand. It would stop that kind of abuse. Well, you'd like to think it would anyway, wouldn't you? Because racists don't tend to...
You're always going to have idiots.
Yeah.
You're always going to have idiots. I'll give you an example, right? My best mate growing up, chap called Alan Ross, who's a really good footballer and that, he played in the same youth team as a lot of lads that are professional now, and he was better than them. He was the captain of the side. When he left school, he went to play for Boston United. He got injured and whatever and went into coaching. I think he started doing his coaching badges at like 19, 20 because of injury. And he's now manager of a team called Horncastle United in Lincolnshire. Before that, he was assistant manager at Sleaford Town. Was it Sleaford Town? It was Pinchbeck. He had been at Sleaford Town as well. He was at a team called Pinchbeck as assistant manager in Peterborough way. And obviously with all the COVID restrictions and that and people catching COVID and games getting postponed, his team's game got postponed one day. And he went down to go and watch Pinchbeck while his team didn't have a game. And he got racially abused by the Pinchbeck fans, bearing in mind he used to be the assistant manager at Pinchbeck and the people knew who he was and he knew who the fans was. And they didn't do anything about it. Okay. And that's even when they knew who it was. They didn't eject the player, they didn't eject the fan. It was literally, and it was right in front of the chairman, apparently, and the chairman didn't do nothing either.
It's good to have times to change, though, right? I think that's...
ultimately, you get dickheads wherever you go.
No matter where you go. I mean, the best thing I can recommend, though, currently, do apologise about that, my phone's gone off at the same time. I think that it is progressing forward. And like you said, there's no going back. And there is idiots no matter where you go.
Yeah. As daft as it is with the racist point of it as well, it's like I grew up at a time, the place I live, I live in the place now that I lived as a kid, growing up and as a teenager and that. And to be fair, as a teenager, it was a predominantly white area and you heard racist stuff quite often. And me having a black best mate, obviously I became kind of quite anti-racist and there was no end of times we end up fighting with people because of racist stuff and whatever.
But growing up and going through my 20s and into my early 30s, and I kind of felt like racism had died out and didn't really hear anything of it anymore. And I felt like the only time it started to resurge a bit and you started hearing it a bit more was all the Brexit stuff. Like, once Brexit conversations were happening, it's almost like it gave people the license to start having them racist views again. And I'm not saying everyone who voted for Brexit are racist, but you saw a lot more comments on social media from then on. And I feel like it's progressed since then. And I think it seems like it's come back. And I feel like right now, racism is worse than it was 10, 15 years ago by a long way.
100%.
It felt like 10 or 15 years ago, it felt like it was kind of almost gone, like they'd eradicated it. Maybe it's different. Maybe if I was black or Asian or whatever, maybe I'd think differently. Maybe I would have been experiencing racism all the way through and have a different view of it. And maybe the fact that I'm not with that same mate anymore because he's in Lincolnshire and I'm not with him, so I'm not hearing it all the time. So maybe that's what affects my view on it. But I just think it just seems like it's kind of come back, which is a shame.
What do you think about the kneeling before a match? Do you think
I think it was a good idea at the time. I think at the time I supported it when it was first starting. I think it's now got to a point, though, where it's starting to irritate people. And when you start irritating people, people don't support it, and it becomes defeating its point then.
Do you think the Millwall fans was right to boo it, though, however?
Say again?
Do you think the Millwall fans was right to boo?
No, no, they shouldn't be booing it, regardless. If you don't like it, you don't like it. You don't need to boo it. But I think it should be optional. I think it's at that point. But the problem is, if you make it optional, teams will feel like if they don't do it, they look like they're kind of being racist. So you kind of feel like you'd have to do it anyway. But I just think it's got to that point now where it's done its point, but if they keep doing it, people just think, oh, yeah, they're just kneeling, it's no big deal. Like, and don't it loses its message. Maybe they need to think of something else to do instead now.
Yeah,
not saying don't put your message out, because you need that message out at the moment.
Yeah,
but maybe just think of something else. Refresh the idea a bit.
I remember seeing a game recently, and even the players didn't look like they cared at all anymore regarding it. You know, it just feels like we've got to do it. It's like a pre-match warm-up now, and like you said, it's a very strong message, but it's starting to lose it. You know, it's crazy.
I mean, even at the local leagues, I've seen some teams doing it. No team's asked us to do it, to be fair, before a game so far. But I have heard of one team, refused to do it, so they kind of made sure it happened, kind of thing, and it caused a bit of an aggro, like between the two teams. Like one felt like they were being dominated by the team because one team was full of black lads and one team was predominantly white lads, and the white team felt like they were being kind of like belittled by having to kneel. That was their point. Whereas the other team thought, well, if you don't kneel, that's disrespectful to us. So that caused a bit of a problem in one game. Obviously, I weren't at the game. It's just what I was told by people who were at it. But no teams have asked us to do it, but apparently teams local are doing it.
Yeah, of course. Now, we're obviously coming up to the 50-minute mark, so we're going to give it 5 more minutes, if that's all right with you, Damien. So, what I'm going to focus on quickly is the lower leagues. Now, as the chairman of, obviously, your club, how are you finding it? Are you struggling with COVID? You know, what's it like, the games? I'm taking
it's been a pain in the backside, because last season was our club's first season. Now, the season obviously got voided. At the time it got voided, we were 5 points off top with 3 games in hand. So we felt we were in a good position to win the league. And we put that point across and we got promoted. So we got promoted into a higher division. A division that we felt like we was capable of being in, hence why we wanted to be promoted. But because we play a few games and then it stops because of a lockdown or it stops because of restrictions, you're tier 4 or whatever, you start hitting a little bit of rhythm and it stops. And you've got to go back again to playing nothing for a month. And then when it comes back to starting again, you've not got your pre-season to get ready. You've just got to go bang straight back into it. You start getting injuries left, right and centre, and it's been a struggle to get a rhythm. So we've not necessarily had the best start in this division, to be fair. I think we've, of the 10 games we've played, I think we've won one, drawn two, lost the rest. And it's been games where we've lost by one goal in the 85th minute and things like that. We've only really been outplayed twice so far. But it's been difficult to get that kind of fluidity going. But I think the other thing that's kind of been an issue, especially for me, I don't know if it'll be the same for everyone else, but the other thing that's been the issue for me is my football on a Saturday is my social side. So when I go to work on a Monday morning and I haven't got football to look forward to on a Saturday, very difficult to motivate yourself through the week, and you go to work feeling miserable before you even started. I think mentally it starts, because I'm not somebody that's mentally going to be feeling down and things like that. Some people are a bit more prone to it than others. I'm not somebody like that. So the first lockdown didn't really affect me. Second lockdown, I was getting peed off of it. By this lockdown, I'm thinking, I just can't be arsed anymore. I just want to be able to get out, get to football, talk to the lads, watch a game. It's like, it's kind of, that's my social thing. I don't really do much else. I've not got big groups of mates that you used to have when you're young and things like that. So, and there'll be other people the same. If I was to speak to all the players that play for us, I've no doubt there'll be an handful, maybe more, that are saying the same thing, that they kind of need that social aspect on a Saturday. It's not just about the sport, it's not just about the fitness, but it's about the mental side and the social side as well.
Well, it's destroyed the boxing community, surely, hasn't it? You know, you've got promoters who can't even put shows on. I see a lot more
promoters,
you know, there must be, and there's so many good coaches out there, you know, especially in Derby, we're blessed with, you know, Dan Gray, etc. But I'm surprised there's going to be a lot of businesses going bust soon, you know? And there'll be
I'm surprised businesses haven't already been going bust the way more than they are, to be fair. I thought they would have been in a bit of a mess by now. Like pubs, I mean, how many pubs are going to reopen after? I'm sure pubs are going to end up, surely not. Or nightclubs. Nightclubs haven't been able to open at all during any of it. I kind of wonder how many, when they're allowed to open, will actually open. As far as the boxing goes, I mean, one of our players is a professional boxer. Like called Joe Hughes, if you've ever heard of him. He's not been able to get no fights. Now, unless you're with a big promotion, unless you're with Eddie Hearn or Frank Warren or whatever, where they can put fights on Sky Sports or pay-per-view or whatever, there's no way to bring any money into it. There's no ticket selling and things like that. So them that aren't the big names can't get the fights. You're right if you're a journeyman, I suppose, you can get the fights or whatever, but if you're just an everyday boxer that's got to sell his tickets to get the fights, you're not going to get them at the moment. So they're losing vital times in their career, aren't they?
Do you think that the government, or do you think the Premier League, should be responsible for looking after lower divisions of football? Because it's not just football.
I don't think it should be the government. I don't think it should be down to the government. The government have got a million things to look after. Yeah. Now, if they give money to football, then why aren't tennis getting it? Or why aren't rugby getting it? Or why aren't whoever else getting it? And then if it comes to all the different sports getting it, then why aren't, I don't know, a specific kind of business getting it? Or whatever. Why aren't performing arts getting it? So you've got to draw the line somewhere. So I don't think it's down to the government. I'm not saying they can't sort of do loans and grants and things like that, but it's not their responsibility. Their responsibility is to the health of the people, obviously. Now, the Premier League, they've got a lot more money, they've got a lot more clout, and there's no Premier League without grassroots.
Yeah.
Without the people coming into the sport, putting on a pair of boots and playing on a Sunday morning or a Saturday afternoon or whatever, without them, there's no future footballers. There's no Premier League. The Premier League would effectively become like non-league if it carried on like that for years. So they need to look after the national game a bit more, really. The Premier League, I think they do have a duty of care. Whereas, like I say, I don't think the government do, but I think the Premier League and the FA do. FA can only do so much as well. Obviously, their money's been right eaten into with the last two seasons. Obviously, a lot of clubs didn't have to pay for their affiliations or things like that. So there's only so much the FA can do. But yeah, I think the Premier League should definitely be doing more than they do. And I think they do give money. They do put money into grassroots, but it's clearly not enough compared to the amount of money that's going around there. But ultimately, it's a business, isn't it? Premier League's a business, and if somebody wants to make money, if it wasn't about making money, then it wouldn't exist in the first place. Before the Premier League, when it was Division One, it was run by the FA. The Premier League was a breakaway business.
Yeah. So I think that's why people were scared of the Euro League as well, going in the same direction of the Premier League, the whole breakaway. But like you say, you need a regulating body in that. Now,
there's only so much money. So if you start doing a European League and Sky Sports starts sticking money into the European League, they're not going to stick that same money into the Premier League, are they?
No.
So everybody loses out then.
Yeah, 100%. Now, I think that's an ideal way to wrap that up. Now, in regard of that, now the next time you're on, Damien, I'm thinking of doing your best ever Premier League 11. What do you think of that?
Oh, I've had this conversation at work before, you know, recently, and it's hard. It's hard to exactly. do. We're trying to think of our Premier League best top five players at work, and coming up with your kind of top three, you can probably get there. Beyond that, when you start picking fourth, fifth, you've got probably 20 players to pick from that you could put in them spaces. So it's hard. It is hard to do, but I can have a go at it.
That's all I asked for. I mean, it depends. We'll start with the classic 4-4-2 as well. That sound good?
Yeah.
All right, Dave. Thank you very much for having us. Anything you want to finish on?
No, not really. Just make sure everyone can be nice to each other and not let everyone get stressed out. At the moment, everybody's struggling. So you don't know what the next person's situation is. So just worry about keeping you and your family safe and happy. And hopefully we're all out of all this stuff soon enough and we can get back to normal.
That I love that. That's a great way to finish. And be kind to each other and stay safe, guys. But thank you very much. Yeah. And on to the next one. The Premier League Best 11 for Damien. Have a good one, guys.
All right, then, mate. Nice one. Thank you.